Welcome to the Something More podcast with me, Jamie Haxby, Steve Carmer, and Josh Fox.
You know, in such a crazy time of change and uncertainty, where all of our values have been flipped upside down, we're going to explore what it means to be truly human.
We are looking at what it means to live fully human with identity, security, and purpose.
And we're going to do that by interviewing loads of different people about their stories, the connection that they have with God.
To find out, in their own life, how have they found something more in relation to understanding and knowing who God is?
And suicide is a phenomena more in the male population than the female, as we know this. But particularly in Western nations, places like Australia, places like the UK, Canada. One of the phrases I sometimes use in some of my talks is that, you know, modern man has everything to live with but nothing to live for. Mm. And so actually, Pinker's right in terms of saying we've got everything to live with in terms of technological advancements, increased prosperity, and yet that spiritual vacuum is still there. In fact, one could even argue that the more prosperous we become, the more magnified it is in some ways, because people realize that actually ultimately these things don't satisfy, you know, in terms of material possessions or whatever it might be. And I think one of the suicide rate is one of the indicators of that.
Oh, I'm muted. Here we go. There we go. Good evening, everybody. And welcome to the live stream this evening. Thank you so much to all of you who have been commenting in already with lots of things to say about how this COVID-19 period is changing us. So, Greg, welcome this evening.
Good evening. Hi, Jamie.
Great to see you. So just to introduce Greg to you guys, Greg is... Here we go. Oh, hang on. I'm live. Welcome. I'm on here as well at the same time. This is... at Hope Church Lancaster, we're incredibly slick, Greg. And
I can see that.
We're great at working technology. It's one of our core values, actually, is being really professional about everything that we do. or not. excellent.
It gives it an organic feel. That's what we like.
That's right. It gives it an organic feel. That's what we're all about, really. And we even have a co-host as well, Greg. I should have introduced you earlier, but our co-host...
You didn't tell me that.
What's that? Sorry?
You didn't tell me that. Who's the co-host?
The co-host is our friend, Mr. Donkey, who...
Oh!
Since Palm Sunday has appeared in most of our Facebook endeavors. So,
does he have a name?
Donald the Donkey. I think someone suggested Donald the Donkey on Sunday. So, yeah. he can jump in with questions as well later on.
That's
as
not
we
a
go.
Politically motivated name, is it?
Perhaps. I don't know. May or may not bear any resemblance to any politicians that you may or may not know. So, anyway, Greg is the director of ministerial training at Wycliffe Hall and Dean of the Wesley Centre for Missional Engagement. And I believe you've also been theologian and missioner at St. Michael the Belfry in York.
That was my last job, yeah.
That was your last job. And then also lecturing at London School of Theology and involved in various other things, including, hang on, I'm reading this off your website in case you hadn't realised, a member of the Archbishop's College of Evangelists, ministered on five continents. You've been a school teacher, a prison chaplain. You've even stood for election as an MP.
Yeah, let's not go there. But yeah, that's
that's right. We'll have to bring Donald the Donkey back out again.
Yeah.
And yeah, married to Tammy, who's a GP, and presumably she's very busy at the moment, I would imagine.
She is. Yeah, she is. Where her practice, she's just been asked to do an extra day, and they've got a COVID clinic there where she's working with her fellow doctors. Yeah.
Fantastic. One of the people we're out every Thursday applauding and saying thanks to. So brilliant. And yeah, we've got quite a few people tuning in as well saying hi. Sarah says hi. Bill and Ang Harrod say hi as well this evening. So thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. And so, Greg, one of the other things about you is the fact that you actually grew up in our own humble city of Lancaster.
I did indeed. I was born in the infirmary.
Born in the infirmary.
Yeah, exactly. Born in Lancaster Infirmary and spent my first 19 years of my existence in the fair city of Lancaster. So I'm a Lancastrian. More than you, Jamie.
More than me. I'm just an Infiltrator. Yeah, that's right. I kind of came up from the south, saw the light, and I've stayed ever since. Whereas you betrayed us, Greg, and went to the dark side. But we won't go there. So we're going to be talking tonight about this kind of thing of basically how is the coronavirus changing society? How is it changing humanity? And maybe more importantly, how is it changing our view of what it is that we desire and we want? So I think one of the stats that I said earlier, I'd heard on the radio, can't find the article, it's probably not even true, but it was that only 1 in 10 people want society to return to the way that it was before the lockdown happened, which is hugely shocking that loads of people are just dissatisfied with the way that things were. So we'll get to that in a minute, but I wondered whether we could come at it from the angle of your own personal story, and we'll come in to land from that way, and we'll just kind of see how we go. And if you guys who are watching want to send in questions or comments, anything like that, please stick that in the
by all means, that'd be great. If anyone wants to wing any questions, that's good. I don't think I can see them, but you can read them out to me, can't you?
I can read them out to you, and I can put them on the screen. So look, here we go. I can do this. Roy says, "Hi Greg, thanks for sharing,
tonight. Hello, thanks Roy, thanks for saying that special."
So there we are. So so let's come at it from that angle. Greg, you're great at answering Q&A as well. I've seen you do that before. So please, guys, do send in any questions and we will answer them. So but let's just start off. Life in Lancaster growing up. Tell us, what was that like for you growing up in Lancaster? Be honest, but not too honest. Tell us what it was like.
Yeah, I used to say... one of my one-liners was, "Oh, I had a fairy tale childhood growing up in the north." Grimm. I've seen you know, fairy tales from Grimm. Sorry, when you have to explain the jokes, stop it. But that's not true. That's not true. No, it was great. I mean, you know, Jamie, you've adopted the city. Lancaster is a great. It's a gem of a city, isn't it? Small, more of a market town, really. City by Royal Charter, about 70,000 population, nestled just south of the Lakeland Hills. 3 miles from the Morecambe Bay,
beautiful.
Trafalbolan to the south. You know, it's great. It's great. Lancaster. It was. You know, in many ways, you know, growing up in Lancaster, it was fun. Many happy memories from that. I love to go back. My mum's still alive. She's how old is she now? 86 this year. I keep losing track about that. Anyway, so I come back to see her. She's in lockdown in a nursing home at the moment with like a lot of old people. But no, it was great in many ways. I didn't travel very much. It was fairly insular, really. As kids, we didn't go very far for holidays. You down to Southport or something like that, which is Merseyside, obviously. I've got fond memories there. I'd love to come back to my home city.
Yeah, yeah. Roy is asking, what street did you grow up on? What school? And rudely, how old are you?
I'm 51, Roy. I was born in 1969 in the hospital. So my secondary school was Ripley St. Thomas Church of England High School, just up from the infirmary. And before I moved away to go to university, we lived on Regent Street. We moved around a few times, but Regent Street, Greaves Way. Mm. Regent Street in the centre of town, sorry. And then Greaves Road. And then just before I moved away, it was Greaves Road in Greaves, next to the Greaves Park Hotel. What used to be the Greaves Park Hotel.
And I've heard rumours that our very own Sylvia, who still does Sunday school at our church, taught you at Sunday school. Is that true?
She did. So if Sylvia's watching this, hi, Sylvia. Thanks for your investment. hopefully it paid off. So the story there was we I mentioned those two addresses. The address before that, we lived in on Wellington Road, which is up in Bowram. Mm. And at the end of Wellington Road, there was and still is a little church called the Church of the Nazarene. And I sometimes say when I tell the story that my parents split up when I was three. But me and my two brothers, middle one of three boys, we lived with my mum. And I sometimes say she wasn't a church goer. She was a church sender. So she packed her three little kids off to this church at the bottom of Wellington Road. And that's where Sylvia was then a Sunday school teacher. Now that's what, when I first heard the gospel. So I was from a nominal Christian home, non-Christian home. And that's when I first heard the gospel. And that little church sent me off on a camp. There was this kids camp, like a Christian summer camp, which was the summer between primary school and secondary school before I went off to Ripley. And that's where the penny dropped. And I gave my life to Christ. I had a kind of classic boyhood conversion experience when I was 11. remember coming home, telling my two brothers, my mum saying, I've become a Christian. I said, and my mum thought it was a phase, like, you know, Airfix modelling, I'd taken up kickboxing or something like that. But it was, the phase lasted a long time. That was the summer of 1980. And actually, this, it's my 40th anniversary, so to speak. This August, I'll have been a disciple of Jesus Christ for 40 years.
Wow. So,
yeah, four decades now. So the phase lasted a bit longer than Airfix modelling or whatever.
That's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. So I guess, yeah, growing up in Lancaster, it wouldn't have been hard until you, it wouldn't have been long until you kind of came up against this kind of question of brokenness in the world, because as you said, Lancaster is at times quite grim. It rains often, but there are many other beautiful things about our city.
There are.
But how did, you know, I suppose one of the things that this virus is showing us is that not all is right with the world, and that it's not just climate change, and it's not just the Me Too movement. There are lots of things that are wrong and broken with our world. I like, and you know, we've got a young daughter, she's 4, and it's interesting watching her growing up and realizing for the first time that not, and it's almost like a surprise to her that things like death and suffering exist in the world. And so what memories do you have, I suppose, of kind of coming up against that? What are your kind of earliest memories of realizing, I suppose, that the world was not right, I suppose, or broken in some way?
No, it's a good question. I remember going to talks on suffering when I was at university, and the speaker saying, you know, talking about suffering now, and you may not have experienced this so far, but you will. You know, the idea that, you know, some of the people listening to that, Christian kids from nice kind of together Christian homes, perhaps they never really come across any hardships at that stage, but they would. But for me, I think from the earliest times that was the case. I was aware that all wasn't right in the world in terms of my own micro situation. Before I encountered suffering out there in terms of the big macro picture, it was the micro picture within my own family. So I've already alluded to that. I said my parents divorced when I was 3, and that was the thing. My parents had a tumultuous marriage. My dad was a successful businessman in Lancaster, but ended up becoming an alcoholic. My parents split when I was 3, so me and my two brothers we grew up with my mum. And one of my earliest memories was rows that happened in the family home. So my mum and she had a different. My dad left, and she had a different partner. Were constantly rowing, and the place was, you know, the home wasn't, it never felt a completely safe place. There was all these domestic rows going on. And perhaps one of the worst things is that my mum, she did it for the best motives, but she brought us up to believe her partner then, a guy called Barry, that she who she lived with, was actually our dad. And it was in the midst, one of my earliest memories, in the midst of a drunken row where the news got broken to us, the 3 of us. We were sat down and told that actually, you know, this. I remember he came across and said, right, I'm not your dad. And so anyway, then he left. And I guess for me, you know, the psychological term we'd use for it these days is a dysfunctional family. I grew up in this dysfunctional family, which wasn't a place of peace and harmony and security. And I you know, from the earliest times, I suppose, I realized that, you know, things were out of sync. Things were not perhaps as they should be. And I realized that when I encountered other families through the church, actually, after I became a Christian. I was brought into other families. I was kind of adopted into other families. And it's by that contrast, I realized, gosh, this is different from what I knew. So it was kind of going from the negative and piecing it together and thinking, actually, it's possible to live in a different way, which is more harmonious, more peaceful, more loving. That hadn't been my own experience in my own childhood.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And we've been, one of the things we've been doing as a church is we've been doing a sort of support line for people that have been suffering because maybe they're self-isolating, whatever, can't get a hold of food. Yeah. And it's been amazing. We've helped about, I think today we've just hit over 400 requests that we've kind of processed.
Wow, amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
It's just in a way, that's an indicator as well. All those people that need help, because you know, there's something broken and there's something wrong. You know, people, there shouldn't be 400 people in Lancaster that need our help in order to get the basic things that they need. Sure. But there are. You can't escape from it. Yeah. Just got a question coming in. Josh says, did any of these memories have a lasting impact on you?
It's a very good question. One of the things I sometimes say, as a pastor, I've been ordained. I'm an Anglican minister. I've been ordained now for 25 years, I think, something like that. So one of the things sometimes pastorally, when I deal with where, you know, people come to me who've come from similar backgrounds. You know, they've broken homes. It's been a dysfunctional home. And one of the things that I sometimes say to people who are blessed enough to come from a pretty together home with two loving parents who together and love each other, I sometimes say to them, you'll never know the blessing that is to you. Because, you know, mm-hmm. often when things are just there, we take it for granted. You know, it's like mm-hmm. like it just is. So we don't we just take it for granted. And I sometimes say pastorally that if you're from a home like that, you'll forever, your life, live in the blessing of that without knowing it. But equally, if you're from a broken home, to some degree, you might forever live with that as a handicap in terms of working that through. And that's not to be, obviously, I mean, I realize that sounds a bit sort of fatalistic or negative, and I'm not saying that the case, but I think things that happen in childhood of a traumatic nature are some of the most damaging things. And the people that I've had the privilege of ministering to who often sadly have got real issues in their life, it can be traced to trauma in childhood. What I would say is that healing and wholeness is possible, and that's been my own journey. I'm not saying I'm completely sorted or together, but I think some of my issues were in terms of the family issues were of such a magnitude that it forced me to deal with them pretty early on, so at university level. And through prayer and counseling and talking things through and praying things through and having good mentors, I think I've been able to come to a position of real kind of wholeness in my own life. Again, not that I'm saying, hey, I'm totally sorted. None of us are. We're all on a journey of becoming. But yes, the answer is that those things are serious, significant, and can affect you for the whole of your life. But the good news is that wholeness and healing is possible, particularly for Christians. I think there's a real head start we've got as Christian people that as we apply biblical truth and Christian community, we embrace Christian community, and God can minister his healing in those areas. And that's been my own experience. Yeah. That's my own testimony.
And certainly for so many people, it's the way in which God gets their attention in their lives.
Absolutely.
It's that famous C.S. Lewis quote, isn't it? He said, suffering is God's megaphone to a deaf world. And
absolutely.
He uses it to wake us up, doesn't he, to the reality that surrounds us. And I kind of wonder whether there's... almost to extrapolate your story to society wide, whether there are some kind of crossovers in that, you know, I found it really helpful what you were saying about, you know, if you've grown up in a kind of not perfect, but a pretty kind of idyllic kind of family setting where everything has been fine. You probably have taken that for granted just naturally because it's hard to imagine anything else. And I wonder whether there is an extent to which that has been what's, certainly in the West, what we have been doing for a good number of years now. Not that everything has been totally fine, but most of us have lived pretty kind of comfortable lives. Economically, things have been pretty stable. Lots of people obviously still in desperate situations, but there's almost many of the things that we have taken for granted have, I guess not just during this coronavirus epidemic, but in the last few years have been taken away. So I was thinking about the 2008 financial crisis that kind of, that we can't trust the banks anymore. There was the Me Too movement in Hollywood that was taken away. There was the Cambridge Analytica thing, social media, Silicon Valley, we can't trust that anymore. And then climate change, which is basically a result of a capitalistic society in a way, and consumerism has produced a sea full of plastic, and all these things that we put our trust in have felt like they've been broken down, and the things we take for granted we can't hold on to anymore. I was just wondering, I mean, you speak at lots of different places. I know you speak around the country, speak to lots of students and other groups, and you obviously see lots of people at Wycliffe coming through as well. I just wonder, do you see an increasing sort of sense of searching, or an increasing sense of like, these things that we took for granted we can't hold on to anymore, and there must be something more?
Are you thinking pre COVID-19 now?
Both. I mean, and tell me how do you think that COVID-19 has made a difference as well?
Yeah. I think it's important not to generalize here. I think sometimes people make grand sweeping statements and saying people are all like this and people are all like this. And one of the things I get asked this quite a lot as a someone who communicates the Christian faith to those who are outside of the Christian faith, people who are not Christians, wouldn't identify as Christians. And the question I get asked is, even this is pre-COVID, is there a greater hostility to the gospel now because of secularization? And my honest answer to that is basically genuine is yes and no. It seems as if this is pre-COVID, that there's, in the times in which we live, there's perhaps a polarization where, yes, there are some people who are even more hardened in terms of their skepticism, their cynicism. In some ways, the emergence of the new atheism is symptomatic of that. Atheism has never been as popular as a worldview. It was almost non-existent when I was a kid. I remember when I was at Ripley, one of my best mates, he was the only atheist in the class. Now, I know Ripley's a church school, but still. And we used to call him Colin the Atheist, and because he was the only one. But now, I mean, that's not the case in schools up and down the country. You know, young people are embracing atheism. It's a trendy thing to do. But there also seems to be, at the same time, this is the paradox, if you like, an openness to that which is metaphysical, not necessarily Christianity, but that which is beyond the physical, so the spiritual, we can say. And so it's a kind of, there's that kind of divergence where, yes, there's a great hardened, people are more hardened in some ways to theism and the idea of God, but also there's an openness to spirituality and something beyond. So I've definitely seen that. The issue sometimes is that there's this recognition that all is not right with the world, and maybe on a personal level people don't feel a sense of completion or fulfillment. And yet, sadly, my experience for many people, there's a disconnect between that and seeing God or the gospel of Jesus Christ as the answer to that. So let me give an example of that. A mission that I did just literally a few weeks ago, this is it was 2 weeks before, 2 or 3 weeks before coronavirus hit. I did a mission at the University of Erasmus in Rotterdam. And very much the students there wanted me to do kind of existential, what's sometimes called existential apologetics. So it wasn't the old propositional apologetics like, did Jesus rise from the dead? It was looking at some of these existential questions of life. So, you know, how can I know community in a time of societal fragmentation? Or, you know, how can I know identity? Am I free to say who I believe myself to be is identity? Something which is self-determined, these kind of things. And one of the things the Christian Union did, which I didn't particularly think was wise, when they put all these talks on, they didn't say on the flyer that it was Christian at all. Okay. And so I my advice to the Christians was, you've got to say this, you can't invite people to a talk. And it's got to have it somewhere on there, you know, otherwise it's kind of false pretenses in a way. Anyway, so what we found is that some people came to the talks who were genuinely drawn by these existential questions. But actually, I remember one of the talks when as soon as God was mentioned, he did the preamble about whatever the topic was and looking at it. And then, of course, as you backpedaled into the gospel, so to speak, as the name Jesus was mentioned, people just got up and walked out. Wow. So it's almost as if, you know, it was interesting to me that there was, they were genuinely interested in the issue.
Yes.
Because otherwise they wouldn't have come. They came to this event where there was a free lunch, but to hear this speaker from England. But when God was mentioned, up they got and walked out because in their mind, clearly there's a disconnect between the veracity of the question that they're asking, which is very real, but actually surely it can't be connected to God, spirituality, perhaps particularly Christianity. I think that's the case for some people, obviously not all, but for some.
I mean, two things come to mind. I mean, why? But also, do you think that is, I mean, has that changed in light of COVID-19, or maybe is it just that the kind of intensity of that searching has deepened, and yet people are not someone said to me a little while ago, people are interested in Christianity in the way they're interested in Morris dancing. They quite want to find out what it's all about, but they have no intention of becoming a Morris dancer.
Well, I think that's true. I think we're a long way back. We need to recognize that, you know, secularization as a phenomenon has gone on a pace in the West, in Britain. You know, Britain is one of the most secular countries, even in the West. I mean, Canada would be the same, sort of France. So basically we live in our kind of cultural moment in the UK is that, you know, many people don't know the first things about Christianity, the Christian gospel. It's interesting, like back to my own story earlier, that I said how my mum wasn't a church goer, she was a church sender. So she herself wasn't a Christian, but she felt that this little chapel down the road was a force for good. So now I'm sure maybe it's a bit of free childcare for her. She was a single parent, a bit of free childcare on a Sunday afternoon, I'm sure as well. But the point is, she felt they were a force for good. Oh, this God mm-hmm. thing that they were offering is a good thing. And I think that's changed. I think in a lot of people's minds now, perhaps Christianity in particular, religion in general, maybe it's a toxic brand.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we have to battle with. But to answer your earlier thing is, has it been magnified by COVID? I think the answer is yes, certainly in terms of that perceived need for things, or the illusion of self-sufficiency, or the illusion of the good life, the happy life. Yeah, and as you say, there's been a whole series of things that have led to that, in terms of, as you say, from the economic crashes to even the various weather experts who look at these things. You know, talk about an increase seemingly in natural disasters, like, you know, tsunamis and flooding and things like that, whether that's caused by global warming. Obviously, that's the common view, scientific view. But nonetheless, there's a whole catalogue of things that we could say, that the sense of people have had that, you know, gosh, I'm going to live the good life, you know, earn lots of money, have a happy life, and it's not going to be interfered with in any way. That seems to be shattered. And so COVID is the latest thing, but and it's affected, of course, everybody globally. So I think that is the case. I think I saw one report. I said very sadly, not surprisingly, was talking about the suicides being up. This is predicted anyway by sociologists, but already several weeks into lockdown, there are cases of suicides, which were the direct link between lockdown and fear in terms of the virus and what it might do and so on. And so I think there is that dissatisfaction with people, confusion, bewilderment. Now, whether they're making the connection in terms of the spiritual dimension of life, what we would say the gospel, that's another issue. And this is why I believe it's our time as the church to have confidence, to be bold and to speak into people's lives. Now is not the time to be shrinking violence and saying, you know, we don't want to offend anyone. And obviously, we've got to be sensitive. Of course we have. But I don't think we should hold back. We should, because, you know, we believe that, you know, as St. Augustine said, you know, oh God, our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee. Ultimately, that peace is found in knowing God, being connected to the Creator who has given us life.
Yeah, and I think we'll get to that in a minute, because I think that is the part of what we want to speak to tonight. But before we go there, I just wanted to ask as well. I mean, obviously, people are wrestling with this searching question of trying to find spirituality. They're probably, if they're watching tonight, they're probably looking at us like a couple of Morris dancers, thinking, what is this all about? I would never want to do this. Okay, it might be one answer, but there are many answers out there. And in a sense, secularism has been one of those answers for quite a long time, and has provided many, or, you know, certainly people that would kind of lay claim to secularism as a kind of worldview would say, well, look, you know, this way of thinking has provided so many good things, and, you know, it's based upon a belief in science and the Enlightenment and rational thought. And you know, one of the books that grabbed my attention a little while ago, I don't know if you saw it, but Enlightenment Now by Steven Pinker, he basically says, you know, look, the Enlightenment project is succeeding at an extraordinarily rapid rate of success. You know, look at all of this, all the stats that he pulls out, which are quite kind of, he carefully selects what he pulls out, but there's less people in poverty now than or there's people on average across the world, there's a higher GDP, whatever, and he measures it in all these different terms. I've not read the book, I've just read the blurb. I mean why do some of these other, it's particularly secularism, but we could talk about other kind of systems of thought as well. I mean why do you think they fall short in a way that Christianity doesn't? Big question.
I think, sure. I think Pinker's thesis basically is predicated on the kind of evolving utopia, and he's not the only one. He's not the only one, and he's not the first person to think about it. That, you know, essentially society is evolving; it's getting better all the time. We're improving, but actually, as you quite rightly said, his stats are very selective. Yes, of course, in terms of scientific discoveries, in terms of medical advancements, in many ways, there's the increase, an increase in terms of prosperity.
Yep.
There's been an evolution, which is a good thing. We could see that in terms of this crisis itself. One of the things is that pandemics like this, what used to be called plagues, you know, the old-fashioned biblical word for these things that used to happen, plague and pestilence. But plague, we're nothing new. You know, they happen. They've happened throughout the history of the church. The last big one, of course, being the so-called Spanish flu 100 years ago.
Yep.
But these are not uncommon. There's in the Church of England, there's in the Book of Common Prayer 1662, there's a collect in times of plague and pestilence that you can pray specifically when these things happen, written in old-fashioned English, obviously. So these things are not new, and yet the stats he ignores. There's like, despite this, there's a wholesale dissatisfaction. So other stats are to do with, well, for example, I mentioned already the suicide rate going up. Mm-hmm. But already the suicide rate was, frightening. If, you know, your age, Jamie, not me, because I'm out of it now, I'm 51, but your age, the statistical probability of someone your age dying would be suicide.
Yeah,
it's a frightening statistic. And suicide is a phenomena more in the male population than the female, as we know this. But particularly in Western nations, places like Australia, places like the UK, Canada, one of the phrases I sometimes use in some of my talks is that, you know, modern man has everything to live with, but nothing to live for. Mm. And so actually Pinker's right in terms of saying we've got everything to live with in terms of technological advancements, increased prosperity. And yet that spiritual vacuum is still there. In fact, one could even argue that the more prosperous we become, the more magnified it is in some ways, because people realize that actually ultimately these things don't satisfy, you know, in terms of material possessions or whatever it might be. And I think one of the suicide rate is one of the indicators of that. So it's basically his thesis is basically wrong in that humanity is not getting better all the time. That, you know, I love that song by Louis Armstrong, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. It's playing the other day in the kitchen with the kids as we had pizza, and it is a wonderful world. And it's shot through with the glory of God and nobility and all these things.
Yeah.
But it's also it's fallen as well. That's the biblical worldview, that the world is fallen, and the fall affects human beings. It affects the political order, the economic order. It affects everything. It affects even the cosmos, creation, the physical world order itself. I think viruses such as this is one of the symptoms of that, affecting even the fabric of the earth as well, the cosmos itself. And so actually his thesis is flawed, and it's not borne out by the evidence of, as we say, wholesale dissatisfaction that we see all around from many people.
Yeah, and also it's kind of during lockdown, which is obviously not a good thing for us on the whole, but during this period of lockdown, many of those kind of things that have been held up as the gems of secularism have been paused, like the economy. The result of that has obviously on one hand been very bad, but on the other hand has been actually really, really good. So environmentally, it's been brilliant. There's just been, so much kind of good that's come about, which shows that it's just it's not a holistic system that is perfect. Mm. There are things that are flawed from it. Roy says he loves that quote, Greg, modern man has everything to live with, but nothing to live for. Yeah, absolutely. One of the other phrases that's been on my mind the last few weeks as well, from something else I was listening to, you know, it's like we want the kingdom, but without the king. And actually, a lot of the... you've just gone, Greg. You're back again. One of the things that... a lot of the things that we really love about the Western world actually were born in Christianity originally, and we've kind of stripped God out of them, and it's like we have everything left, like you said, everything left to live with, but the thing that was at the center of it all, that we were living for, has been taken out, which has left a gaping hole. We're going to get to the answers in a minute, but just another thing.
Great.
To kind of throw in
there.
Can
you hear me?
Yeah, I
can
hear
you.
You can't hear me? You still there? He's gone. Greg has gone. Well, we will wait for Greg. We'll wait for Greg to return at some moment. But let me go to some of the comments whilst we just wait for him to come back. Ashley was just saying that one thing she's going to do after all of this is over is tell people about Jesus and his wonderful saving grace, as now I'm no longer scared of saying I'm a Christian. For life is short and you never know when your time is up. But I want you to use that precious time to share God's love and enable as many people as possible to find God as possible. People are searching for something more, and we need to tell them, show them, and rejoice in God's mighty name. Now, guys, I don't know whether watching tonight, whether you would call yourself a Christian or whether you'd kind of be on the journey of kind of searching for stuff. But either way, I just want to encourage you that there is, although this story might just seem really, really, really weird and the gospel might seem crazy and perhaps you've never dreamed of stepping inside a church, there are thousands of people like some of the guys we've got on here tonight, like Ashley, who found real and genuine hope in this story, and it's made a transformative difference to their lives. So just encourage you to check it out for yourself. But anyway, I think Greg is back. Back in the room. Can you hear me, Greg? He can hear us, but we can't hear you. I think your sound, something has happened to your sound. Hang on. Can you fix it? He's gone again. Right. We'll wait for him to come back. Let me go to some of the other kind of questions and I'll answer some of these and then maybe Greg can jump in a minute as well. So Janine says, don't you think that this way of doing church reaches the world more than sat in churches on Sunday? Anyone can just click in and listen. Janine, I think you're absolutely right. There's a real opportunity at the moment, isn't there, to do the things like we're doing at the moment and to reach out online and reach people that we would have never normally have reached before, because they can just click in and watch. And, you know, we've been talking about whether more people are kind of interested in Christianity and spiritual things at the moment. One of the things we've seen at church is a large number of people that are tuning into our Sunday morning services just to kind of check it out for themselves, which I think does tell you something about the sense of spiritual hunger that exists within our society, that people are searching for something, and they are, in some cases, don't want to make blanket statements, but in some cases they are turning to the church to find and fulfill that. And we've even had messages sent into our Facebook page by people that are searching for something and asking if we can kind of help them to discover it. So I think it is providing incredible opportunities that we would have never had otherwise. And so again, if you're watching this tonight and you're not a regular member of our church or any church in Lancaster, just encourage you that this is a great time to explore these questions and find out truth for yourself, either by watching some of the videos that we're doing or by reading through one of the eyewitness accounts of Jesus's life. You can find it online anywhere. So just encourage you to check it out. We had Greg for a second and then he went again, but we'll keep going. Celia says, yeah, I agree with Janine. I love having these chats and groups online when people can't get out to events. Yeah, it's been really good. I've certainly enjoyed it anyway. So yeah, for me, it's been beneficial and I hope it has been for you guys as well. But I'm also looking forward to seeing all your faces again and actually getting together properly in community. Josh says, I think this pressure on humanity is helping us value what is truly valuable and bring about a greater sense of authenticity and thankfulness. And on that note of thankfulness, we may have got Greg back. Greg, can you hear me? No, I can't hear you still. I don't know what you've done. This is brilliant. Can you fix it? He's trying. I do think you're right there, Josh. There is there is certainly a return, isn't there, to community that we're definitely seeing in amongst lots of people at the moment. Greg's gone again. He'll be back in a minute, I'm sure. We'll just keep on rambling until he reappears. So Josh said again, yeah, I think this pressure on humanity is helping us value what is truly valuable. I think you're right, Josh, but I suppose the kind of next place I want to move, when Greg comes back, I want to ask him, because I think the question really is, okay, this you know, like C.S. Lewis said, suffering is God's megaphone to a a deaf world, to wake us up. And we've said on some of these streams before, you know, that God has got the world's attention right now. And he's kind of holding the world, I suppose. And lots of people are looking to lots of different places to find something that's going to give them safety and security and peace and a sense of belonging and all of those things that we know that the gospel can provide. And if you're watching tonight and you don't know those things, Jesus can give those things to you. I want to just emphasize that it's true. Yeah, I suppose the next question I wanted to ask Greg was what is the kind of the mechanics of that? Like, what is it actually about Jesus that provides something of stability in this time? What is it actually about Jesus that provides a sense of peace? What is it actually about the gospel that means that we can face this current moment, even when you're left stranded on a live stream by yourself, to just continue anyway because you believe that God is good? Like, what is it about the gospel, I suppose, that does change things in this time period for people? Celia says, I keep wondering how and what I would like to change on the other side of COVID with work, school, community, thinking about who and what we value. Yes, Josh, you seems like Celia values Josh, maybe. We all value Josh Taylor. It's great. But I do think you're right. I think it might, for lots of people, this might be the mechanics that basically put into place or the situation that puts into place for lots of people. Well, what is it that I'm going to prioritize in my life? And that's why I think it's really important that we just get on to platforms like this and speak the truth of the gospel as we're doing on Sunday morning and just let people be exposed to it so that they see something of the truth themselves and hold it out during this time of desperation. Yeah, Roy says, I love this. God allows the storm to show us that he is the only shelter. Yeah, amen, Roy. I think that's really, really good. And that is certainly what it is that I think we are seeing in this time, isn't it? That there is a storm that is leading us to shelter in the person of Jesus. Greg, are you back with us?
Yeah, it's working now.
Fantastic.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's great. Roy was just saying on the comments that God allows the storm to show us that he is the only shelter, which is a great reminder when, you know, the person that you're interviewing ditches you on the live stream.
Do you know what it was? A phone call came in and it disconnected the my phone. Anyway, never mind.
That's all right. Well, there you go. It happens. So no worries. Well, that does kind of lead us nicely on, because I suppose the kind of next question that I really wanted to ask you. So I do think you are absolutely right. That kind of belief in secularism as the answer is, like, it feels like now nobody can really deny it with any integrity. It's bankrupt. It's smashed on the ground in pieces, and it's not going to provide for us what we need. Demonstrably, that is true. So, and this kind of, Roy says, you know, Greg, what do you think are the best ways of sharing the gospel today? And I was just saying, I wanted to ask you, you know, what is it actually about Jesus and the gospel that provides some of these answers that people are searching for? But they can't even, I think for lots of people, they can't even articulate what it is that they're searching for.
Yeah.
They just know that they want something more from life and they want to live the good life and know what that looks like. They don't know where to find it or what it looks like or how to even go about asking the right questions. Yeah. So how can people ask the right questions? How can we help them to discover the right questions? And what is it about Jesus and the gospel that actually makes a difference in the midst of this?
I think one of the things that we need to do as Christians, particularly those who would identify as evangelicals, is move away once and for all from a kind of a truncated version of the gospel that has in some ways minimalized what the Christian faith is all about. So Dallas Willard, you may probably come across an American
great writer,
theologian, great writer, who died a few years ago.
Yeah,
one of his comments was evangelicals have effectively truncated the gospel and made it a gospel of salvation. So in other words, all it becomes about is, you know, getting into heaven. So, you know, Jesus died for your sins, say this prayer turn to Christ, and you're saved. Yep. Now, obviously, that's part of it. That's central to it. Of course, it is being rescued by Christ, and Him doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves on the cross. But then, when we're born into the new community, which is the kingdom of God, effectively, it's a whole way of living, thinking, being, conducting ourselves. Put simply, it's a kind of a worldview. It affects everything, and it's really important we recover this sense of Christianity being this incredible holistic worldview and way of living and being and thinking and doing that really changes everything. So, for example, one of the things that to do with at the moment is with us all being in lockdown, obviously acute loneliness and disconnect. And my friend Simon Ponsonby, he's one of the staff of St. Aldate, my church in Oxford, St. Aldate's. He preached online yesterday, and he shared a story about going out his house, his vicarage where he lives, and there was a young woman who was basically in a heap on the floor who was sobbing, and he asked her what the matter was, and she just said she couldn't bear it any longer. She's not touched a human soul in 3 weeks, and she was just sobbing. Now, obviously, he tried to comfort her, and he went to get his wife, and when he went to get her and came back, she was gone, this young lady. But he said this haunted him, this stuck with him, this young woman who was sobbing because of disconnection. She'd not sensed human touch in 3 weeks. And what one of the things is, it's reminded us, hopefully, this lockdown, how much we need community, how much we need one another. And sometimes in the materialistic rat race, which is the world in which we live, where there's not even time for family, let alone meaningful friendships, that can get squeezed to the margins. So I think that one of the potential things we can recover from this is the need that, we're built for community, we're built for one another. And and where the church comes in is because at our best, we're called to be God's new community. That's the word church, ecclesia, literally, as you know, means, or certainly a paraphrase of it, is community. God's get together, called out ones, quite literally. And so we're supposed to be this, God's community, which demonstrates to the world a different way of being and doing. And when we do that, it is profoundly attractive. And as you know, churches, imperfect as they are, I know many churches that actually are, places of love, places of caring, places of acceptance. So that's just one motif, the motif of us being the body of Christ, being God's new community, that I think should be profoundly attractive to a world which is hungry for that community. And I think this COVID-19 thing has just highlighted that. That's just one area.
Yeah, I'm always struck when I read through the New Testament that often it feels like the primary, I guess, apologetic or evangelistic strategy in some cases is it feels like it's the community and the love of the church. Paul says, doesn't he, that unbelievers would be convinced of their destruction when they see the love of the church community. Yeah. And I'm like, how on earth does that, what is that all about?
Absolutely. How does that,
It's just great.
Let your light shine before people, that they may see your good deeds and come and glorify your Father in heaven. It's the demonstration of the gospel from the ecclesia, which is profoundly evangelistic. It will lead people to glorify the Father who is in heaven.
That's the
model.
Yeah, that's it. So for people that are watching and they're like, maybe that aren't believers and they're watching this tonight, maybe just scrolling through their Facebook feed and they've just dropped in and hearing something about that community. I mean, what is it that should be different about Christian community compared to the bowling club or bingo on a Friday night or whatever else it is that people might go to find community? Like, how should this kind of community be different?
Yeah, well, in essence, the difference is, from the bowling club or the pigeon fanciers club or whatever it might be, is the church is the
more thing that I have to do for community.
The Whippet Society. Sorry, it's the community of faith. That's what the church is. We're called to be. We are the community of those who believe, and so that's profoundly countercultural in a world which tells us that God is not, or God does not care, or he's, and particularly there are voices that are saying that now because of this. Tragedy is not new, but it's this kind of tragedy is new for us in our generation, and there are those voices who say, either God doesn't exist, or if he does, he's not powerful, or he doesn't care. But that's a lie. And as the church, we are the community of faith. But there's that verse in the Bible where it says the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself in love. And so actually, true faith will express itself in love.
Mm.
And whilst the creedal part of who we are might not be attractive to people, it may seem we're just like a bunch of, we believe this strange stuff. Yep. When we love deeply and we love counterculturally and we love in a way which is sacrificial, that is profoundly attractive to people. And, and in that sense, the word inclusion is hijacked by certain sections these days. But in the best biblical sense of the word, we're called to be that inclusive community that welcomes all people into our midst, where they can find love, they can find acceptance, supremely find a relationship with God, and they themselves can be transformed and changed.
And I wonder, there's something about the gospel as well that allows people in order to be able to do that? Because in order to create really tight-knit community is incredibly self-sacrificial. You have to put other people's needs before your own, and other people's lives before your own. That doesn't necessarily come to us naturally.
Yes.
In fact, quite the opposite. But,
yes, indeed, yeah.
But if we have a faith in Jesus, like, that means that we know that our life is secure into all eternity.
Mm.
And so it therefore becomes easier to say, well, do you know what? I don't have to be so protective anymore about myself. Yeah. I don't have to always win and always be right, because there's one who has made me right, and there's one who in whom I have my security, which means I can actually lay down my life in loving service to other people, because he has given me everything that I need in order to be able to do that. And so it's the natural, I suppose it's just fleshing out what you're saying. If the natural fruit of faith is loving community, it should just follow, shouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And those of us who are his disciples, Christ empowers us to be loving. So often when we don't, in our own strengths, we don't feel like it, we perhaps wouldn't feel loving towards certain people. He, by his Holy Spirit living in us, he can empower us to love in a way that we wouldn't normally be able to do. It's a supernatural love that's there.
And I love reading through the Gospels, and you kind of see the same sort of thing, don't you, with Jesus and his disciples, that there's just this like crazy bunch of people on this adventure together, just kind of, those first few years of Jesus's ministry with his disciple just capture my imagination so much. There's so much kind of life and vitality. It's great.
Yeah,
it's great. I just wonder, I don't know if you could try and spell that out for us. Particularly in this current time, for people that are maybe not stuck in with a church community, and for people that are, with this kind of longing for community, how can they find that through the church, through the person of Jesus, in this current moment of COVID-19 crisis, where we're very separated from each other?
Yes. Well, I think, one of the blessings we have in our age, obviously, is technology, isn't it? In previous times where community was banned because of contagion and so on, when there'd been plagues, they didn't have this. We have this, and so I think that's a blessing to thank God for. And I think it's not the same as meeting face to face in person. And I hope all these online churches and meetings are going to create a hunger for real community, proper, authentic community. So when this is all over, people, they won't take for granted meeting together as the church, as the people of God, as we do. So I think that's one thing to make the most of the technology. Mm. I think as well to be prayerful before the Lord and as Christians, to say, well, who is it perhaps who needs connection right now? And that's something I've been doing. And I've been trying to ring one or two people a day who I thought, who perhaps need connection somewhere. Obviously that depends on them being able to use the technology. I think that's something that's a good thing to do. But I think in terms of, the presence of God, the great thing is the Holy Spirit doesn't keep social distancing. That verse where it says, there's a friend who's closer than a brother. Yeah. You know, Christians before us, like Richard Wurmbrand, who was imprisoned in Romania for being a Christian in the Ceausescu regime. You know, some of his books talks about being in solitary confinement and knowing the profound presence of God. I was in our own day. There was Terry Waite, you know, who was in recent memory, who was imprisoned by jihadists, Islamists in the Middle East for, was it 100 and how long was it? It was a long, long time anyway. Wow. And I noticed he gave an interview the other day. Mm. And in effect, Terry Waite was basically saying, you know, those of you who attempted to get into self-pity about lockdown, get over it, you know, get over yourselves. Now, obviously, you don't want to diminish that because it's very, you know, we don't want to diminish people's very real issues. But you can see from his perspective, he was saying that. But I do think that one of the things that is very common in the Christian faith is that people neglect their individual devotion with God, if you like. Mm. And they just they become dependent on the collective. So there are many. I know this as a pastor. It's so easy, you know, go to church to get fed through going to church every week, but your own prayer life being, you know, not really, you know, very deep or significant at all. So I think this is the time to press into God. It's the time, you know, there's a friend who is closer than a brother. The Holy Spirit doesn't keep social distancing. Yeah. You know, let's press into Him in the private place, just like Jesus says, go into your room, close the door. Your Father who sees what you do in secret will reward you. There is that reward for us.
Yeah.
More as much as ever, you know, where we can't meet authentically in the collective, but we can actually press into God and know his presence. So this is an opportunity for us to take our roots deep into God, I think, you know, that. Yeah. And it's a challenge. I do think the word that I keep hearing about this is shaking. Yes, you know, you've touched upon that already, Jamie. It's like shaking the world, you know, in terms of all the things that we once held dear, and you know, as the song says, and you know, that we trusted, you know, whether it's our finances or our holidays abroad, our second homes, whatever it might be, all that's been on, you know, there's been pause pressed on that, and community, and so it's a shaking for the world, and hopefully it's a, you know, an opportunity for people in their desperation to come to Christ. But also I think it's a shaking for the church as well, that, you know, we're being shaken out of our self-sufficiency. And the question the Lord's asking is, are we really dependent on Him? Do we really trust Him? Mm. Are we really prepared to trust Him even when it's dark, even when the evidence seems to be the opposite? You know, and it's a challenge to us, I think, to draw close to the Lord and be in that place of intimacy with Him, I believe.
Yeah, that's really, really helpful. Guys, we'll draw to a close in a little bit. So if you have got any last kind of questions for Greg, please do send them in on the comments and we'll do them before we go. A few people saying, yeah, just great point about community and how that is just at the crux of the Christian faith, really, and something we need to be investing in. But also the relationship with God and, yeah, the personal devotion thing. So I was just wondering, my personal question is probably, how can we, you know, I mean, and coming from the point of view of maybe someone who's watching this as well that might not even be a Christian, has never kind of done that sort of thing before, you know, shut the room and go and spend some time with God. I mean, how do you practically do that? Like, I mean, how do you do it, Greg? I mean, can you give us some kind of tips and advice on how to, you know, I think sometimes some of us go and do that kind of thing. We shut the door and then like the phone pings and then like the bird flies past the window and then, you know, you notice something on the carpet and our mind is just kind of all over the place. How can we effectively spend time relating with the Lord, getting into His presence and experiencing Him without our friends at church, without the music and all the rest of it?
Well, two things. I mean, you mentioned already about if the people, you know, there might be people who are watching who are on the you know, on the periphery a bit, maybe they're not a Christian.
Yeah,
the first thing, if you want to pray to God, is give your life to Him. That's the first thing. That if you feel like your prayer is bouncing off the wall, you know, you've perhaps not made your peace with God in terms of have that relationship with Him. And that's as simple as say sorry for the stuff you've done wrong, said wrong, and thought wrong, you know, what Bible calls sin, and just simply say, I turn from my sin. Jesus, come into my life. You pray that now, you pray that tonight, and then, you know, God will answer. He'll, as you turn from what you know to be wrong to God, as you understand Him, as He's revealed Himself in Jesus Christ, then God will make Himself known to you, I believe. But for the rest of us who are Christians, I think it's good you're going back to basics, it's good to have a dedicated time. You know, some people are morning people. I'm more of an evening person. It's good to have a dedicated place. This is, I'm look blessed. I've got an office here. And what I do simply, obviously, use a scripture. So I'm working through the Bible. I don't know, this is a passage I read. This is a loose leaf Bible I've got where it's got huge margins.
That's really
and,
good.
And I'm basically reading the passage of scripture and just writing down different comments as I sense.
Where'd you get that from?
The Lord speaks to me. Do you know, I had this for years. I'd never used it. And then with the lockdown situation, I thought, aha, I've suddenly got time to do this. Brilliant. I don't know where you get it from now, but it's that's been really useful. I found really worship really useful. So I basically, on my laptop in front of me here, I just click on YouTube, Bethel Service, this, you know, Bethel Church, Redding, California. They do great worship there, and their kind of services, like everybody else's, are online for free at the moment. So I put that on, you know, use this the song worship to focus on the Lord, read a chapter of the Bible, and make little notes about things that I sense that God might be speaking to me. Another thing I found useful this time is communion. I know this is as an Anglican vicar, I'm probably not officially supposed to say have communion on your own because there are church rules about this. But I think communion is powerful, isn't it? It's, you know, just to go and get some grape juice or wine and some bread, and maybe with your spouse or family if you're living with people, or if not even on your own, just take bread and wine, because they're physical symbols, aren't they? The sacrament is a physical symbol that point to something invisible beyond themselves. And at this time where we're disconnected from community and a lot of the stuff we take for granted, which is the physicality of our faith, meeting with others, it's a powerful symbol in terms of our redemption, of knowing Christ. So that's what I do in my times alone. You know, sometimes it feels more of a duty. Often it doesn't. It's a profound sense of God by His Holy Spirit drawing close as I make that decision of the will to draw close to Him.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I mean, it's funny actually. At church, we've ended up doing communion every single Sunday since lockdown, which we didn't plan. We've never even discussed it as a team. We've just ended up doing it, which is funny. Yeah. Just to return to something and something that draws on memory as well, and takes you know, this
exactly
is we always did together. So again, it's like
communion. It's very powerful.
It is, yeah. It is. A few comments to sort of close with. I'll pull up this one from Ashley just because it's very encouraging. She says, yes, it's so amazing. I'll never forget the night I was baptized at 11 years old in an outdoor bath. The moment that I came up from being submerged, I felt an overwhelming love, acceptance, hope and joy, and felt that I belonged and had an amazing friend of the Holy Spirit who is with me always. And I received a Father who loves me eternally and set me free from the darkness. God never does anything bad. He never hurts His children. How do I know? I know because He helps get me through. And just so encouraging. What was that? Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? Just to really be reminded, like, this is the gospel that we believe. Mm. And you know, it does make a tangible difference in the middle of this time. As Greg said, the Spirit is always with us. And it's not caught up in Sunday morning meetings or big gatherings with lots of people and a great worship band, but we can experience Him any place, any time. Nanette says, Jesus promises that we will find Him when we genuinely seek Him, be open to Him really being real. I think that's great advice as well for anybody who is searching for some sort of truth or something to believe in or put their faith in during this time, you know, that Jesus promises that we will find Him when we genuinely seek Him. So go and look for Him and just try praying. Mm. See what happens. A dangerous thing to do.
Yeah.
Give it a go. So fantastic. What does Vic say? Vic says, feel touch started from being a baby. How important was Jesus' touch to the leper? The crying girl knew what she was missing. I'm not entirely sure what Vic means, but... a touch from Jesus certainly changes everything, doesn't he? Just like you see with that leper when Jesus meets and touches that leper, well, multiple places, but the leper in Mark 1 I was thinking of in particular. When we meet and encounter Jesus, it does change and transform everything in our lives. So yes, thank you so much to everyone who's been listening. Thank you, Greg, for coming on.
Pleasure, Jamie. nice to be your guest this evening from Oxford.
No, it's been great to chat and really enlightening. And I feel like we've come full circle, really, in terms of the answer to that question, you know, this search for true humanity in this time of coronavirus. You know, it's actually, the answer is we relate to each other and we relate to God. Those are the two things that we kind of have drawn down to, isn't it? In terms of discovering real community amongst ourselves. And then in terms of discovering a genuine relationship with God. And this shaking is helpful for us, because no longer can our relationship with God be particularly shaped by, you know, the favorite worship leader or that song that we love or all the stuff that we experience on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, instead,
it's just us, him, and the scriptures. And so it's a challenge, isn't it, to get and, yeah, be shaken into to genuinely relating. So there we are. So, yeah, thank you, Greg. It's goodbye from
Pleasure.
Me. Goodbye from Donald the Donkey. and
goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me. Yeah, that's right. So we'll see you guys next time. Thank you so much.